Thus the process goes on until the first swarm of traveling atoms, each surrounded by an envelope of the matter of each plane upon which it has evolved, has built up a satellite upon the first plane, and each preceding satellite is peopled by hosts of divine sparks, each of which has built itself an envelope or series of envelopes according to the state of evolution at which it has arrived. But the first swarm of divine sparks, by the inherent forces of their natures, have devised themselves forms. The Logos has become aware of the fact and has sent out each succeeding swarm with the achievements of the first swarm implanted as archetypal ideas in their consciousness. That is to say, that whatever rhythms have been achieved are impacted as vibrations in each successive swarm. This is what is meant by involution. Evolution is the expression of these in the matter of whatever plane it is upon which evolution is proceeding. It will thus be seen from the foregoing, that in time, all the sixth plane atoms will undergo this process. You will note that, just as the symbol of the satellite upon the seventh plane was a sphere with a three-sided solid figure, a pyramid with triangular sides, the sixth plane is a four-sided figure, a cube, and so on down the planes. The fifth plane has a five-faceted figure. The fourth plane has a six-faceted figure. The third plane a seven-faceted figure. The second plane an eight-faceted figure. The first plane a nine-faceted figure. You will see that the numbers add up to 10, and that 9 is the number of the sides of the facets forming the figure, which symbolizes the forces of the first plane. Therefore 3 times 3 is the perfect number in the first plane. 10 is the number of forces in manifestation for our universe, but 9 is the number of the cosmic force which called that universe into being when that force is manifested on the first plane. Chapter 15. Evolution of the First Planetary Form. In the previous lecture, the evolution of the divine sparks was traced, from the time wherein all those of the same type gathered themselves together and formed a group consciousness. We then traced the phases of the developments of these groups from one plane to another on each plane, adding a shell of the atoms of that plane to the concentric layers of atoms revolving about the nucleus of the original traveling atom, until finally upon the seventh plane we find 7 shells about the central nucleus of the divine spark. The relationships of the seed atom, the traveling atom, and the 7 shells are complex, and must receive further elucidation before we proceed. The traveling atom is a projection, not of the Logos, but of the cosmos. It is thus at the same time more primitive and more closely related to the ultimate source of existence than a projection of the Logos could be. The Logos projects the general framework of forces and phases which condition the universe as a whole. The cosmic atoms, which have come under the influence of the Logos, project the innumerable units, which the logoidal concept binds into an aggregate. The cosmic atoms are really younger brethren of the Logos cosmic units themselves that have not reached the development which the Logos has reached, but are of the same type. Therefore each atom of a logoidal universe is, for this reason, a potential divinity. Remember now, that movement is the basis of all things. Abstract movements, which are opposed, lock up force and render it static fixed. It is these locked up forces which become a form. A form is simply a force which is not free to move. Any series of changes which are completely compensatory settle down into a cycle of action and reaction. As soon as such a cycle is established, it cannot change its mode of motion, and therefore a force is locked up, not in a motionless point, but in a spinning ring. The points are units. The rings are organisms. Either a unit or a ring, when once established, can move as a whole, and when this movement of an object takes place, there are 2 factors present: the object which moves, and the movement it makes. The movement, apart from the object, is of the same nature as the movement which gave rise to the object. Whenever you get an uncoordinated movement, such as the tangential movement of atoms before they are coordinated, there is permanency of rhythms, and therefore no form is created. But as soon as compensatory coordination is established, forms of abstract movement are built. This principle applies to many considerations, and is therefore elaborated here in order that it may be available for future reference, and when the abstract archetypes of anything are referred to, You will know that it is this replica of a rhythm that is impacted on another plane as a vibration which is referred to. This is the key to the nature of memory. Before proceeding further with the study of the evolution of the divine sparks, we will refer to the evolution of the archetypes of the globes or satellites, whose origin has been described. The unifying of the divine sparks into a group consciousness gave rise, as aforesaid, to the organization of their attendant atoms into corresponding geometrical form. After the dispersal of the atoms, the archetypal form remains, according to the law above described. This form is a miniature reflection of the logos, under that aspect in which it is presented to its universe, that is to say, a system of stresses. This system of stresses organizes the atoms of the plane of which it is, into its framework, and this equips itself with a definite form. There will then exist, in addition to the evolutionary swarm of divine sparks, a planetary spirit with a spherical body, built up on a framework of stresses, and this planetary spirit will be profoundly imbued with the type of activity and organization that was the characteristic of the swarm of the divine sparks during that phase of this evolution when they occupied its sphere. When the next swarm comes to this phase, they find that their evolution has to take place in relation to the planetary spirit which is the lord of that sphere, because it is the dominating influence thereon. They will, therefore, find ready-made the conditions which their predecessors had to evolve, and they will start therefrom upon their own evolution. Each one, being equipped with a shell of the matter of that plane, will, from this basis, proceed to gather about it a shell of the matter of the next plane. For remember, that although, in the cosmos, the planes are extended in space, being based upon movement, in a universe the atoms of the planes are not extended in space, being the products of an image held in consciousness, but are differentiated in type. It will thus be seen that the divine sparks do not have to change their place in space in order to gather atoms of another type about them, because atoms of all types are everywhere, but they merely have to change their mode of motion in order to produce a type of movement in which the atoms of another plane can take part. Whenever the coordination of movements takes place which changes a static unit into a spinning ring of cyclic rhythm, such a change takes place, and a cyclic rhythm always gathers about itself atoms of the plane below its own, because its movement approximates to theirs. For instance, as soon as a prime atom moves along a tangential path, it becomes a tangential atom. But supposing an organization of prime atoms moved along a tangential path, they would form a tangential molecule, and being larger than tangential atoms, would form a center of attraction for those atoms, and would collect a shell of attracted atoms about them. That is how all shells are built. To return, however, to the evolution of a planetary spirit, it will possess, to begin with, merely an organized sphere of the atoms of the plane on which it originated, and when the new evolutionary swarm of divine sparks reach it, they would find themselves with seventh plane bodies on the seventh plane planet. But in the course of their evolution in that planet, they will build themselves sixth plane shells, and they will coordinate their consciousness of these shells into a group consciousness, and when they depart on their evolutionary journey, they will leave this group consciousness as an archetypal form in the consciousness of the planetary spirit, and this archetypal form will gather sixth plane atoms along its line of force, and the planetary spirit will now have two bodies, because they are organized. This process is repeated with each fresh phase of evolution, until each planetary spirit has achieved its full complement of bodies and is, therefore, able to take a swarm through the full circuit of evolution. But as each planetary spirit is profoundly imbued with a type of activity which the swarm was engaged upon when its form was a building, each planetary spirit represents a different phase in evolution. They are therefore all different in character, and the evolutions conducted exclusively upon them have each a corresponding dominant note. For instance, on a seventh plane planet, the characteristics of the seventh plane will dominate all forms developed thereon. The prime rhythm of that plane will be the keynote, and all subsequent rhythms will be multiples of it. In a planet upon the first plane, the prime rhythm will be likewise the rhythm of that plane, but that rhythm, being a maximum rhythm, all subsequent variations will be fractions of it, And on the intervening planes the prime rhythms will be as a decimal point. You will note that a swarm in evolution on a planet starts with the same number of bodies as that planet has, and builds an additional one in the course of its evolution, thereby endowing the planet with another body, until the maximum of 7 is reached, and then devolution sets in wherein planets and sparks divest themselves of bodies. That subject will be dealt with later. You will also perceive that the order of evolution in a universe is the opposite of the order of evolution in the cosmos, because a universe is reflected from the mirror consciousness of a great entity. Abstract movement gives rise to forces in the cosmos. Forms give rise to abstract movement in a universe, and thereby link themselves onto the cosmos, of which more later. It is therefore essential in a universe to have a form in order to evolve to cosmic level, thereby enabling them to link themselves onto the cosmic atoms that gave rise to them, thereby making these cosmic atoms into great entities. Thus do the atomic planes of the cosmos evolve. This is the secret of the God in man. He is related primarily, not to the God of his universe, who is his conditioner, but his creator, who is a corresponding atom in the cosmos, who creates but has no power to condition, because it is itself conditioned by the great entity of which it forms a part. But when the reflected atom of a universe develops a corresponding aspect to the nature of its creator and can thereby unite with it, that cosmic atom receives into itself all the conditions of the universe which was projected by the great entity of whose body it forms a part. And, as that universe is conditioned by the great entity, the cosmic atom thus becomes a replica of the great entity, and being thus completely conditioned by it, is no longer being conditioned but has been conditioned, and therefore its conditioning is of the past, and therefore in the present is unconditioned by the great entity, because it has achieved a state in which it conditions itself, and so is independent. It is made free of the cosmic planes, is no longer held in bondage to the service of a great entity, but by means of this attachment of an evolved atom of a projected universe, it is raised above the status of the atoms of its plane, and becomes, in its turn, a traveling atom, and together with its attached divine spark of the reflected universe, it makes the rounds of the rays of the cosmos, and thus, in its turn, becomes a great entity and develops a universe. This is the goal of the evolution of every reflected atom in a universe, to develop a divine spark to complete the evolution from the human to the divine in a reflected universe, and to unite with its cosmic creator, thus enabling the cosmic atom to evolve through the phase of a traveling atom into a great entity. It is this scheme of evolution which we are now considering. These last details have never been revealed before. Human thought has never before passed beyond the conditioning logos, but it is now revealed that, though the logos is the creator of an universe, each atom in that universe is separately created by a separate cosmic atom, which aspires, by means of that reflected life, to achieve a state whereby it can continue its own evolution. Therefore, it can be said of man that, by eating of the tree of knowledge, they should be as gods. It is this knowledge which has been withheld on the outgoing path of evolution, lest souls should be tempted to turn back and forestall their goal, but to those who passed the nadir, it can now be revealed. Chapter 16. Evolution of the Lords of Flame, Form and Mind. We are now in a position to reconsider in greater detail the evolution of a divine spark. Let it be noted, to begin with, that the first swarm of divine sparks differs from its successor in many respects. To begin with, the first swarm is composed of the traveling atoms of the universe. Secondly, these divine sparks are subjected to no other influences than those of the logos itself. Because, satellites not having been developed, they are not exposed to the influences of the planetary spirits. Therefore the sparks of the first swarm have the divine image impressed on them in all its purity, unblurred by other influences. There is an absence of cross-currents in the influences which play upon the first swarm, which causes them to attain to the divine ideal with much less stress and effort than their successors. In their composition the influences of the cosmos predominate. Each subsequent swarm, however, performs its evolution in a more highly evolved universe, and therefore the influences of the cosmos find a potent rival in the influences of the universe. Another point in which the evolution of the first swarm differs from the evolution of any subsequent swarm is this: the first swarm gathers the material out of which their bodies are made from the undifferentiated atoms of the plane on which they evolve. They thus carry on these atoms with them to the next globe of their evolution, and so on throughout the planes. So that upon each globe upon which they evolve, the potentialities of reaction corresponding to all the planes above it in the universe are established, by the methods previously explained. These divine sparks, thus passing down the planes, leave behind them a series of archetypes, and when they pass back up the planes by a method to be described hereafter, they become the powers and potencies who conduct the evolution of their successors. These are the lords, the principalities, the regents of whom you have heard. The method of evolution of the subsequent swarms differs from those of the archetypal sparks. The logos, having received from the archetypal sparks the concept of their evolutionary achievement, impacts this upon the divine sparks of the second swarm, by the method of vibration previously described, so that they start out on their evolution with the innate capacities for reaction laboriously built up by their predecessors, and find themselves under the influence of a sphere of forces which the activities of the atomic portion of their predecessors formed into the sphere of a satellite. They, in their turn, collect shells of the matter of the plane about their vortices in the course of their evolution. But there is this point of difference, that they have not got to build a group mind out of their consciousnesses. They have merely got to attune themselves to one which already exists. They have got to become at one with their sphere, which includes the influences of the previous swarm, as well as their own swarm, and not merely at one with themselves. When this atonement is achieved and the Logos has contemplated the result and turned inwards to his subjective meditation, these sparks do not continue in the sphere of the satellite, as did their predecessors of the first swarm, but, the logoidal attraction being withdrawn, the mass of the globes upon the next plane attracts them, and they are disengaged from the centripetal forces of the globe on which they are, and pass onwards. Upon the next globe they take up the next phase of their evolution in precisely the same way as their predecessors. Again recapitulates their predecessors' behavior, up to the point of departure, to the fifth plane globe. Here a change occurs. The second swarm, having arrived at the second globe of their evolution, do not pass on to the third immediately, but are now exposed, the logoidal attraction being withdrawn into the subjective state, to two sets of planetary influences, those of the first and third globes, the first swarm always keeping a globe ahead of them. They are therefore pulled two ways, and this conflicting influence is sufficient to overcome the attraction of the individual atoms for their atomic shells. The atomic shells then fall to pieces, and return to their original condition as atoms of the plane to which they belong, but, though they are freed from the influence of the divine sparks, they are immediately caught up by the influence of the forces of the sphere in which that evolution has taken place, and are retained therein. Thus upon the sixth plane a planetary spirit will have, not only the sixth plane atoms held along its line of forces, but also the seventh plane atoms shed by the divine sparks. A planetary spirit, be it noted, is really the group spirit of the life that evolves in its sphere. The divine sparks that are thus robbed of their atoms, are reduced to their original state of a seventh plane atom attached to a divine spark, and in this state consequently re-enter the sphere of the manifesting of the unmanifest, which, in an universe, corresponds to the central stillness of the cosmos, and therein they receive anew the impress of the logoidal image, plus the fruits of the evolutionary achievements of the archetypal sparks. The archetypal sparks being always a plane ahead of their evolution. The second swarm sparks always start out on their new round with the potentialities of reaction of an additional plane. As they pass out through the phases, they therefore gather about them the matter of each plane they pass through, forming it into concentric shells, as has been previously described, until they arrive at the fifth plane. There they build up a shell of fifth plane matter with the influence of the fifth plane planet, and repeat the process of assimilation to the group mind, the shedding of the shells, and the return to the center. It will now be perceived that there is a fundamental difference between each swarm. The first swarm is engaged solely with magnetic action and reaction and vibrations, and they are called in the technical terms of occultism, the Lords of Flame. The second swarm are concerned with the building of matter into the form of the planetary spirits, and they are called the Lords of Form. We will now deal with the third swarm. They issue forth, as before, 7th plane atoms, stamped with a logoidal image of a more evolved type than either of their predecessors, because the Logos has evolved by means of the evolution of their predecessors. They proceed to the planetary sphere of the 7th plane, and herein the difference of their evolution from their predecessors becomes apparent, for they do not collect the matter of the sphere to form a body, but use only that matter which is under the influence of the planetary spirit in whose sphere they are evolving, and as this matter is accustomed to react to an ensouling divine spark, it is much easier to manipulate than the matter of space. Therefore evolution is more rapid. But as these divine sparks cannot advance to the glow beyond that upon which they are evolving until the preceding swarm has moved on, they are compelled to remain upon the globe of their evolution after they have exhausted its possibilities of reaction, and the superabundant energies, to whom the evolving channel is closed, make play among themselves. This is the first instance of free will within the cosmos, and its resultant activities building individualized reactions into atoms, is called epigenesis. This is the first occasion on which the atoms are differentiated one from another, and this leads to the applying to this swarm of the name Lords of Mind, because individualized experience is the basis of personality. It will here be seen that a new evolving principle is introduced, which is that the checking of progress in one direction by preventing it from becoming more elaborate upon the original type, lifts, or sublimates it to a new aspect. If, however, the checking be too long continued, it would cause it to revert to a more primitive type. This, however, cannot occur at the present phase because the synthesis of forces upon these planes is perfect, but is merely referred to in passing in order that the correspondences may be seen. The process of evolving a new aspect of a checked force is called sublimation. The process of returning to a simpler type of evolution is called degradation, and is always harmful, because the capacities of reaction acquired at a more advanced level cannot be controlled or checked by the governing forces of a more primitive state, and develop an extreme individualism, thus breaking up the synthesis of force on the plane on which they find themselves. You will, of course, perceive that it is the same type of process which sets free a traveling atom for its evolution to a higher state of existence. But a traveling atom has completed the circuit before it undergoes this experience, and may be termed the child of the cosmos or the universe as the case may be, born at full term. And the regressive, or degraded atom is born out of due time and abortion. If it lives at all, it lives as monster. This is the origin of certain types of devil. These matters will be dealt with fully in their proper place, and are merely referred to here in order that the correspondences may be seen. Fortunately, the balance at this phase of evolution we are discussing is perfectly adjusted, because the influence of the Logos is the only influence in the universe. Therefore, no such retrogression can take place among the primal swarms. It is to epigenesis in a transition state that we owe the origin of evil in a universe. Thus the swarms pass on. The Lords of Flame leaving behind them galvanic stresses of all types. The Lords of Form leaving behind them a sediment of atoms which are built into great spherical shells by the galvanic stresses, so that each plane is dominated by a set of galvanic stresses which develop into a planetary spirit, and a set of the shells of the matter of other planes held into a form or body by that planetary spirit, which develop into a planet, as known to astrology. But be it noted, that each planet, although it ultimately possesses matter of all seven planes, has a planetary spirit formed of the stresses of the plane on which it is. Thus the planetary spirit of the fifth plane would be an abstract mind, and the planetary spirit of the earth is an etheric double. We have now traced the three primary swarms of the outgoing arc, and you will see how each carries a new factor from plane to plane. The first swarm, the Lords of Flame, do not return to the central point of manifestation until they have completed the round, have been down the planes, and back up the planes, and have thus completed their evolution. The second swarm, or Lords of Form, only return to the central point of manifestation after they have recapitulated their evolution and mastered an additional plane. That is to say, in their first outgoing, they progress through two globes and return. In their second outgoing through three globes and return, and so on. Always following on the wake of the first swarm, with whose evolution they synchronize. Because, as soon as the first swarm has achieved a new factor, the Logos assimilates it, and enters a subjective phase to do so. During that phase, as previously said, the universe is left to its own devices. The first swarm, upon its globe, settles down to stereotype its reactions, and it is the influence of that organized globe in an otherwise unorganized universe, which breaks up the shells of the second swarm in the preceding globe and so sends them back to the central point of manifestation. Likewise, the progress of the third swarm is synchronized, because they have to wait for the second swarm to withdraw from a planet before they can advance to it. The evolution of the first swarm is slowest because it is all original work for them. The second swarm occupy much time in their evolution because they are constantly recapitulating, and gathering up and breaking in, new matter of the different planes, and therefore synchronize well enough with the progress of the first swarm. But the third swarm has much of its evolutionary work already done for it, and therefore has to wait. Hence it elaborates itself. Elaboration means differentiation, and differentiation means personality. Chapter 17. The influence of the regents upon the globes. Having traced the evolution of the Lords of Flame as far as the seventh globe, which they form upon the first plane, we will now trace the course of their return to the center. It will be perceived that, by their nature, they have built those systems of magnetic stresses which constitute the framework of the globes, and are afterwards elaborated into planetary spirits. On their return journey, they travel back along the line of globes by which they came out. There is this difference, however. Instead of building themselves a form in the matter of that plane, they find the form already built, but they also find it inhabited by the succeeding swarm of divine sparks who are undergoing evolution thereon. So that, on the sixth globe, two sets of lives are being lived. The second swarm on the outward arc, and the first swarm on the arc of returning. The first swarm, entering into the already prepared group mind, have subjective consciousness. The second swarm, engaged in building a group mind, have subjective consciousness only. Therefore, they are not aware of their companions of the first swarm who also inhabit this globe, though they live in their influence, which is the effect of imparting to the shells of the matter of that plane, which have formed about the divine sparks, the same type of vibration as the seed atoms of the first swarm are themselves vibrating to. This is the familiar phenomenon of the impactation of a cyclic rhythm inducing a vibration. When this condition has been arrived at, the second swarm, being able to vibrate to the same rhythm as the first, become aware of the members of the first not by direct perception, but by perception of the changes of the outermost shell induced by the presence of the first. This, however, does not occur until the end of the period of evolution whereupon both swarms quit that planet, the second to advance to the seventh globe, and the first to return to the fifth. In addition to the influence they exert upon their fellow sojourners in a globe, the first swarm have certain evolution to undergo on their own account. On their outward journey, they have collected to themselves shells of each plane, which they have not shed but have carried out with them. And on the return journey, each shell forms a means of reaction to the matter of each plane on which they find themselves. Being capable of both action and reaction, these form vehicles of manifestation and means of perception. Thus the indwelling spark is able to act on, and react to, the matter of each plane on which it finds itself, and, though it carried out its evolution in the sphere of attraction of the globe on that plane, it can yet extend its activities a certain way beyond the sphere of the influence of that globe. This is a point whose significance will be seen later. Upon each globe, upon the return journey, The sparks of the first swarm exercise their influence upon the shells that are be gathered about the sparks of whatever swarm they encounter there. Upon the sixth globe they meet the second swarm. When they themselves depart to the fifth globe, the third swarm advance to the sixth globe, and so on. They just miss each other, so that the third swarm is distinguished by this peculiarity: it never meets the Lords of Flame. It never encounters an evolution higher than its own, and therefore its predominating influence is that of the logoidal image, and of the production of its own epigenesis.